Hey guys, welcome back to Get Fit with Jules. This is week 3, and this week we're going to be talking all about nutrition, fad diets, everything that you can do to maximize your weight loss or muscle gaining journey. If you sometimes feel powerless to resist that cheeseburger or that jelly donut, it's not because you're weak. Human evolution has wired you to lose control when it comes to certain combinations of nutrients. I think that foods that combine high levels of fats and carbohydrates or sugar can seem like a match made in heaven, right? They taste so good that it's actually easy to overlook that there are actually like very few examples in nature of foods that combine these two nutrients. We all know that for tens of thousands of years, our ancestors got their fats and carbs from separate places. You know, fats from meat and seeds and carbs from grasses, aquatic plants, leaves, stems, and berries. So it was pretty unusual for early humans to combine these foods in a single meal, right? As early farming developed, humans began combining foods such as starchy grains and fatty milk products. Just recently, in the last century and a half or so, foods combining fats and carbs into one meal have become the norm for many of us. So that's pizza, ice cream, Snickers bars, pastries like chocolate croissants. They're all high in both fats and sugar. But 150 years is the blink of an eye in terms of human evolution, right? And our bodies still don't really know what to make of this disgusting nutrient combo. Now, according to a new study, it's our body's unfamiliarity with these combo foods that have contributed to the global epidemic of obesity. So it's also left millions of people feeling powerless in the face of food choices. So let's find out more about why. So in a study published in the journal Cell Metabolism, researchers have carefully explored the way that human brain reacts to foods that combine fats and carbs. So they did it by setting up a sophisticated system in which the human volunteers would choose between or bid on images of different foods. So some of these foods contained only fats, some only carbs, and some of a combo of the two. So as these participants made their choices, the researchers used brain scanning technology to find which parts of their brains were most active. So the volunteers ended up to choose or bid the most money on the combo foods. So the research team theorized that the choice had something to do with the reward system in the brain that releases the most pleasure-causing dopamine in response to the foods with the greatest energy and density. So it sounds pretty straightforward, right? Given a choice of foods, we humans will pick the one that will give us the most life-sustaining energy. Seems simple, right? But believe it or not, our bodies are actually pretty good at estimating the energy density of a purely fatty food once we've eaten it. These post-ingestive signals are critical for telling us how much of any particular kind of food we need to eat to consume all the calories we need for daily life. So this is how we know when we're full. But for some reason, we're much less able to make the same calorie estimation after we've eaten a carb-rich food, or a food that contains a combo of both fats and carbs. So some of these after-eating signals go from the gut to the brain and cause the release of dopamine, which is a neurotransmitter that helps regulate the brain's reward and pleasure centers. So the researchers suggest that different gut-to-brain pathways evolved from our diets. So one for fats and a different one for carbs. So the catch is that when we're giving the choice of food that contains both, the brain really doesn't even know what to do, and ends up releasing a lot more dopamine than it would for either separate nutrient alone. And also, when we get rewarded for something, we tend to do more of it. So in fact, according to the study, getting rewarded with this much dopamine turns into the act of pretty much choosing fat plus carb foods into less of a matter of choice and more of a matter of addiction, sadly. So we all know that researchers will often use rats or mice in tests before they actually start testing on humans, right? But the researchers in this study note that rats are very good at regulating how many calories they consume when they're fed foods that contain either fat or carbs. So give them foods that contain both, though, and this ability to regulate how much to eat breaks down. So as a result, the rats quickly gained weight. So humans appear to do exactly the same thing. Our brain was unclear as to how to reward us for choosing these combos of foods, simply because it rewards us amazingly. And of course, we like the reward, so we repeat the action, and we'll end up gaining weight in the process. So that may have not had a huge effect when we were eating a serving of grains, milk, and honey that contains about 1 gram of fat and 27 grams of carbs. But if you put a tray of donuts in front of us, though, with about 11 grams of fat and 17 grams of carbs, it's easy to see how our brains would have almost become wired to gain weight. So in the test itself, the study participants based their choices on images of food, not the food itself. So by combining data about the images the participants chose with data about the activity within each participant's brain as they made their choices, the researchers gained insight into what drove the choices. So in modern society, there's a tremendous variety of food available to us. If our brains are not very good at estimating how many calories we'll get from the foods that combine fats and carbs into one item, then we're surrounded by these items, well, that's where problems are beginning. Over time, according to many researchers, this fat plus food combo choice actually gets reinforced to the point that our brains respond to these combos of foods much like they do to other substances that give us a huge rush of dopamine. So those other substances are things like drugs. So as the researchers put it, in quotes, one mechanism in which the modern food environment may promote overeating is by combining fat and carbohydrate to potentiate reward and therefore facilitate the transition to habitual responding as is observed in drugs of abuse. So I know that was really complicated, but what they mean is to simply say that eating these kinds of foods can become as addictive as drugs of abuse, such as like heroin, cocaine, and nicotine. So yeah, it's definitely weird to walk into a grocery store or restaurant and look at these combo foods as if they were different forms of drugs, but it's not a bad way to look at it. It helps you realize that, you know, the struggle is real, but resisting these combos and your brain's focused, and your brain's being so confused messaging around them may just be the thing to retaining control over your nutrition. So before we dive into nutrition and many of the fad diets, such as, you know, the keto diet, we're going to dive into, if you want to lose fat before you change any single thing in your diet, you need to do this. So it seems too simple to work, but the science backs it up. So with this one simple step, you can learn a whole lot about your diet and maybe even shed some pounds in the process. So for many people, the thought of precisely dialing in their daily calories, carbs, protein, and fats can be so overwhelming. And I understand that. They want to run screaming into the nearest all-you-can-eat buffet and drown their sorrows. But here's an idea. Don't change anything, but track every single thing you eat. I know, sounds crazy. Don't even limit your calories or even count them. Just write down what you eat and drink every meal every day. You can use an app, you can carry around a notebook or a sheet of paper, send emails to yourself after you eat something, whatever works for you, but you have to just do it. And it sounds too simple to have a meaningful effect, but like, honestly, it does. And here's why you should consider it. So there was this really intense study that was published by the Kaiser Permanente Care Management Institute's Weight Loss Management Initiative that looked at the impact a food diary had on weight loss among more than 1,700 men and women. So these researchers concluded that the best predictor of weight loss wasn't even any particular element in anyone's diet. Instead, it was how frequently the people in the study updated their food diaries. So those who wrote down their food daily lost twice as much weight as those who didn't write down their food at all. It also helps you be more aware of portions as decisions. So the difference between a single razor-thin slice of key lime pie and a couple of beefy slices that may seem insignificant when you're at the table could actually end up being the difference between a weight gain or weight loss in the long run. As more and more fad diets come into play and more military diets and grapefruit diets come about, we always have to ask ourselves, why are we doing this in the first place? And right now I'm going to talk about why the keto diet sucks. So to be frank, the keto diet is an amped up Atkins diet, and we all know that it's terrible for your cardiovascular system and not a sustainable way to keep the weight off. So in this keto diet, you're pretty much eating a ton of calories from fat. and carbs are very, very limited. So a normal healthy diet should be about 20 to 35% of protein, 45 to 65% of carbs, and like 10 to 35% of calories coming from fat. So this terrible keto diet macronutrient distribution is actually very dangerous for the human body for multiple reasons. So reason number one, we use carbohydrates as fuel for our brain. So glucose is needed for cognitive function, and many people on the ketogenic diet experience brain fog and actually difficulty focusing. So ketone bodies, which are built up in the blood serum, acid to acetate, which is found in urine, and acetone, which is responsible for your nasty breath, are created when carbs are not present and are not effective or healthy for our brain. So this may also cause metabolic acidosis, which is characterized by reduced PCO2 and even a lower pH, which is bad because our bodies always want to stay in balance. All right, and reason number two, on a keto diet, your intake of fruits and vegetables is extremely limited, if you even eat them at all. And we all know how important the fiber, minerals, vitamins, and other compounds in fruits and veggies are. Which leads me to my next point. The keto diet is extremely low in fiber. So fiber is not only protective against many gastrointestinal cancers, but it's also a big factor in fullness and weight loss. So constipation would be very, very common on low fiber diets like the keto diet. Reason number four, ketosis and ketoacidosis is what is happening in the body and brain on a chemical level. So this is the body making fat into something the brain can use when carbs are not available. So it's a lot of work for the body to produce and not as efficient as the carb, and can be incredibly dangerous for people with diabetes. And additionally, we have some cells with few to no mitochondria. So these cells are carb dependent and must be fueled by glucose. So these cells include certain cells with no mitochondria in our blood, our eyes, and cells with few mitochondria, which would include your renal medulla, and your testes. Reason number five, you're going to have some stinky breath. A lot of people complain about keto breath, which is halitosis, and which it's bad breath that comes from acetone and ketone bodies that makes for an acetone-like smell in your breath that no amount of brushing or mouthwash can fix. So it's something that medical professionals look for and, I guess, smell for in malnourished patients. And reason number six, high blood pressure and cholesterol is bound to happen. It's a high-fat diet and, you know, like, how could you not see this one coming? The body can only break down nutrients at a certain rate, and high levels of fat in the diet may lead to high levels of blood lipids, and they're responsible for blockages and other cardiovascular complications that lead up to death. So while you can reverse the numbers, the plaque buildup in arteries is almost impossible to reverse, so it's really not worth it. It's something that's hard to say because a lot of people don't want to hear it, but following this diet is often a form of disordered eating and may lead to an eating disorder. So cutting out whole food groups is not healthy. We really need three macronutrients in appropriate portions, with having like a majority coming from carbs to have a healthy body. So our body needs a variety of foods for best health. And the reason that this diet works, you know, in quotes, is for that this weight loss is that it restricts the types of foods that people tend to overdo it on. So like chips and candy and pastries and cakes, you know, things like that. So any diet that will cut out your favorite foods will cause weight loss, but at what cost? Physically and mentally. Which also leads into number eight, that not all fats are actually created equal. Most people starting a keto diet are not differentiating between a saturated, which is a solid at room temperature and not something we want in large quantities, and unsaturated fats. So those are liquid at room temp and like supposed to be healthier. So getting this wrong also increases complications from the diet, and many people who have followed a diet high in MCT have experienced undesirable digestive issues. So while I did just tell you why the keto diet sucks, the only population that the ketogenic diet is scientifically proven to be beneficial
and safe is for a select group of people with epilepsy. So this is the position of the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics, and the keto diet especially sucks for athletes and people who are working out to lose weight, because our preferred fuel source is glucose, which is a carb, from either blood glucose or glycogen. So running exclusively on fat shows athletic performance, as the body works much harder to break down fat, and it'll just decrease your overall performance. Additionally, the lower protein intake and change in hormones in the body with a keto diet lowers the ability to build and maintain muscle mass. So if mirror muscles, you know, like biceps or abs, aren't motivating enough to keep you off of it, remember that our organs, like the heart and also the muscle tissue that would be broken down by this diet, and causing organ damage or failure. So it'll get you mentally and emotionally. Ketogenic diets can cause headaches, brain fog, and often irritability and obsession with food. So this type of diet will very likely make you think about food an unnecessarily large amount of time and make it difficult to be social. So you wouldn't be able to eat out at restaurants, you know, the same things out where your friends are going, and you'd have bad breath. You may feel more depressed, as serotonin, you know, the happy chemical, is produced from carbs. We're going to tie this podcast right back in, and we're going to talk about the essential question, which is, how can literature be a vehicle for social change? And even though it's not exactly literature, I believe that even just, like I said before, writing down everything that you're consuming can be such a vehicle for your own personal change. And in many forums, we have, like, you know, thebodybuilding.com, Quora. Those are all vehicles for social change, especially because it gets you talking about it. The most important thing is to be talking about problems that we need to be addressing. And by even just bringing it up, we are taking a step in the right direction. So if you want to be that person that is going to be the, I guess, driver of the vehicle of social change, ask a question on your social media or on your MyFitnessPal, any type of thing to get the conversation started. And if you have any questions on it, feel free to just ask a question. You know, no one's going to discriminate you just because you are curious, you know? So when you're even thinking about doing a diet such as a keto diet, you need to look at why you're doing the diet in the first place. You need to look at your eating habits right now, your support system around you, your exercise habits, and the choices that you're making every day that eventually in the long run are affecting you. So by looking at all of these components, make sure that the reason that you're doing a diet isn't for a boyfriend, isn't for any external resource, or to gain anything from someone else. It all needs to be about you and changing yourself for the better. So finding whatever diet or whatever kind of lifestyle change works best for you, make sure that you're doing it purely for yourself. All right, guys, and that will conclude the end of the third podcast. Thank you so much for listening, and please let me know any diets that you've tried that haven't worked out, or diets that you have found that were helpful, and maybe we can try them out for a week and, like, review them. Thanks for listening.